Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. Joining me in studio today is Jonathan Field, our radio producer. Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning.
Hope everyone's out there is ready to have a nice 4th of July weekend. We hope everyone has a safe and enjoyable 4th, and we give thanks for this great country we live in. We may have our challenges at times, but we're really blessed to be in this great country. So happy 4th to everyone out there, and please be safe. We've got a good program today. We're going to get kind of in the weeds, talking about compliance. Always kind of an interesting subject, right, Jonathan? With getting into the weeds, talking about compliance issues.
Yeah, especially with number of new guidances that Chris is going to be talking about today.
So joining us today in a little bit will be Chris Condolucci, the principal and sole shareholder with CC Law and Policy. Chris is one of the leading authorities and a regular speaker at our events around compliance and the ACA and some of the rulings. So look forward to that. Just a couple of reminders. If you've checked your email box or haven't, we have the videos from IHC Forum and Expo in Atlanta are now out there and live on IHC University. So if you were with us and want to access this as a reminder of what you heard in the general sessions or you want to share it with your peers, check it out. If you missed it and want to catch up on some of the discussions from leading employer panel talking about wellness to the millennials to, private exchange general sessions and our closing employer panel, go to www.theiacc.com. and access the IHC University, where you can access all of the videos from all of our events over the past 2 years, plus get access to other information. Also, just a reminder, too, that, we're coming up on deadlines shortly on our Superstars and Innovators. So if you've got a client, if you within yourself, you have somebody within your company that you'd like to nominate for our annual Superstars and Innovator awards that will be showcased, at our IHC Forum West and in our annual special issue. Again, go to the IHCC site and click on nominations and send your nominations in. We'll be going over these. When's the deadline, Jonathan, coming up?
The deadline? We've got about a month, I believe. So we'll start, sorting through all the nominations in early August.
Yeah, so please do that and get those in. We look forward to hearing from you. That's how we find out, where the real heroes out there are getting stuff done, where the real innovation is out there that's working. Very popular awards, very, very high level of interest, from our readers and our audience and our attendees at West. We're on top of Private Exchange Forum Baltimore coming up, Jonathan, September 8th through 9th. We're hard at work on finalizing that program. If you're out there, considering, how to improve, the front end, which is your benefit admin enrollment, which is kind of the first step that people take on the migration to an exchange, you'll learn about that innovation and those discussions at IHC Forum West. If you're looking to add, solutions and products like telehealth or transparency or supplemental voluntary or even wellness, to your benefit offering and to a benefit marketplace platform. You'll hear about those solutions and learn about those solutions at Private Exchange Forum. And you also listen and learn about, where exchanges are migrating to and where we'll end up, with where exchanges will play a primary role in helping manage care, delivery of care, and what, Ryan Howell at Private Exchange Coalition calls kind of version 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0, which is really the roadmap for employers and all those to look at as to how you migrate your employee population. So we hope you can join us at Private Exchange Forum Baltimore, and we've got a current July 4th promo out right now that will save you $200 on attending. You just enter July 4, Jonathan, is that correct? July 4?
Yeah, just July 4.
Yeah. And so go to
caps for July, numeral 4.
So go to privateexchangeforum.com. Mm-hmm. And you can take advantage of this. Jonathan, will be open all weekend or when?
Yep, all weekend. Monday night, 11:59 p.m. on July 4. So just before midnight is when it's set to close.
So if you've got your toes in the sand on the beach, you know, check it out. If you're rocking on the chair at a mountain home, check it out, you know, or having your morning cup of coffee. We'll hope you check out Private Exchange Forum. And while you're on our site, you can access IHC Forum West, which comes up November 9 through 10. We're excited about that. That event is following, you know, the election, so it'll be interesting buzz throughout the event talking about, you know, what's potentially next. And again, you can find that at IHCCforum.com, and that event is, again, November 9 through 10. So Private Exchange Forum, September 8 through 9 in Baltimore, IHC Forum West in Las Vegas, November 9 through 10. So a lot happening, you know, with what we're doing, and a lot happening around these rulings that people will be interested in finding out about. Jonathan, what else do you see out there in the market right now?
Actually, surprisingly, a lot this week. You know, we saw a big acquisition by Teladoc, and that's just, you know, telehealth news, and the telehealth industry right now seems to be growing very quickly and setting itself up for more future growth. And so they acquired HealthySU, $125 million to acquire there, primarily their mobile engagement platform, I believe. So that was some of the big news this week.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting stuff. And I think, again, telehealth is being embraced by employers and health plans and others across the country.
Yeah, health plans as well. Yeah. Doctor on Demand just announced their partnership with Harvard Pilgrim.
Oh, so did they really?
Yeah. One of the respected health plans in the Northeast.
Exciting stuff. And around the exchange market, I think there's a lot happening there with companies looking to be acquired or acquire. A lot of consolidation. You know, I was on the phone yesterday that I can't talk about this, but a major supplemental health player and what they're doing with acquiring an exchange. I mean, that's a major, you know, move to where they see the opportunity in this marketplace.
Sure.
You know, a lot of activity around mid-sized companies, a lot of activity around small group. I think finally it's coming down to we're small group, you know, the 2 to 99 market. Companies are paying attention to how to enable that marketplace. What about wellness? Anything around wellness, Jonathan, did you see happening this last week?
Wellness, yeah, we have some good articles right now that we've actually published in the last week. We had a call for content go out last week, so if anybody's listening, it's not too late to get in on that summer call for content. We have a lot of spaces in our e-newsletters, which currently reach about 35,000 subscribers. Yeah. So, we've had some good responses to that. Including one from Fonda Nark, and she's with West Corporation, who owns the parent company of several companies, including Health Advocate. She actually just published an article about wellness for employers with kind of a spread-out geography for their workforce and how to keep people engaged when you have people at different sites and whatnot. So, I mean, the interest in wellness is absolutely not slowing down from what I can tell. There's some good insights up on the website right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, to talk about IHC Forum West, it just reminded me, Jonathan, that we've created a very positive relationship with WellCOA, who will join us at IHC Forum West, and is going to really do a hands-on, nuts-and-bolts workshop, four-hour pre-con on the benchmarks and putting a good wellness program in place. So if you're a company, maybe you're on the first, second step, and this is a great opportunity to come and get your, you know, hands dirty and kind of really hear from one of the leaders and in a really positive training environment, what are the steps you need to take to put an effective wellness program in place?
Sure.
Yeah. We hope you do join us at our events. Come to our website and access our website, where Jonathan and the team are constantly posting, new content and articles that people are working with us on. And as a reminder, what Jonathan just said, if you've got a good story to tell, let us know about it. You know, that's how we communicate. This is about the community participating with us. You know, we all talk about collaboration. The IHC is about collaboration. So if you want to speak, reach out to us. If you want to contribute, you know, an article, reach out to us. If you have people to nominate, reach out to us, because that's how we really find out the people that we need to showcase is from the industry itself.
Absolutely. And before we welcome our first guest on here, we just want to remind everybody out there, we do have a promo for the Baltimore event for the holiday weekend. Just go through the normal registration process at theiccforum.com, and at the end, enter July 4. It's July, all caps, and just the numeral 4, and you get $200 off your registration.
Yeah, now I'd like to join or welcome our guest on the program. He's a regular speaker and contributor here at the IHC. He's a friend of the IHC's, Chris Condolucci, principal and sole shareholder with CC Law and Policy. Chris, good morning to you.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing today?
We're doing great. Great to have you on the program. Happy 4th to you and your family.
Yeah, indeed. Happy Friday.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, give our audience, before we kind of jump into the weeds here, and there's a lot of weeds here, as you know better than anyone, give us a little background on yourself and on CC Law and Policy, if you would, for our audience.
Sure. No, I appreciate that. So to everyone, you might have heard me speak before, and I appreciate Doug, you and others, including me, in many of the conferences that you put together. They're fantastic. So I'm an employee benefits attorney by training. Had the opportunity to work for the Senate Finance Committee during the development of the ACA, and as a result, participated in drafting portions of the law, you know, including the ACA exchanges, all the insurance market reforms, and all of the new taxes under the law. I left the government in September 2010, and now I have my own legal and policy practice, where I provide, you know, legal counsel on matters relating to the ACA, be it employer compliance, be it understanding the insurance reforms, regulations affecting insurance carriers, as well as the ACA exchanges. But I also do some policy work, policy analysis, working with folks on Capitol Hill, as well as the federal departments. For all intents and purposes, mostly ACA-related, a little bit benefits-related, like HSAs, tax treatment of health insurance, but primarily ACA-related.
That's great, Chris. I appreciate that. And we got a lot going on here. Let's talk about the individual market a little bit and get kind of your clarification on why the federal departments prohibit the purchase of an individual market plan on a tax-free basis.
Yeah, and it's a good question, and, you know, it's been a question that's been out there since, you know, I would say 2011, 2012, and really the federal departments responded to this question of whether an employer can provide tax-free reimbursements for the purchase of an individual market plan by issuing guidance. And Treasury, HHS, and DOL, which I'll refer to as the quote-unquote federal departments, have actually issued 6 pieces of guidance, really, again, dating back to January 2013. The federal departments also codified this guidance in regulations. And essentially, the federal departments have said that if an employer does provide a tax-free contribution or reimbursement for the purchase of an individual market plan, that will trigger a $100 per day per violation excise tax. Now, the big question, you know, it has been, you know, why did the federal departments, and really this goes to your question, why did the federal departments issue this guidance in the first place? And what's kind of interesting, and I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but pre-ACA, there was a prohibition in the law under HIPAA. I think most benefit practitioners know and love HIPAA, or maybe not love HIPAA, because it's a very complicated law similar to the ACA. But under HIPAA pre-ACA, generally speaking, you could not give an employee a tax-free contribution for an individual market plan. And that was generally prohibited because under HIPAA, group health plans, the premiums could not vary based on health status. And pre-ACA, as we all know, carriers in most states could underrate based on health status such that the premiums for these individual market plans would vary based on your health status for an unhealthy person versus a healthy person. And the departments back then took the position that if an employer was contributing toward the purchase of an individual market plan, that made that individual market plan a quote-unquote group health plan, thus subject to HIPAA, thus running into the prohibition that I discussed. Well, ACA comes along, no underwriting based on health status, so carriers are prohibited from varying premiums based on health status, so the HIPAA problem goes away. And most practitioners, mm-hmm. like myself, back in 2011, said, wow, this is great. Folks can now purchase an individual market plan on a tax-free basis. Well, the mm-hmm. federal department still didn't like that, still didn't mm-hmm. like the purchase of an individual market plan, so they created a legal fiction, as I like to refer to it, suggesting that a reimbursement arrangement, one, is a group health plan, and that group health plan is subject to the ACA market reforms. And last point, because I'm delving into the weeds probably more than I would like, but last point, when it comes to this reimbursement arrangement being a group health plan, the whole reason why the federal department says it violates the ACA market reforms is they say that the reimbursement up to the premium amount results in a quote-unquote annual limit on the dollar mm-hmm. value of essential health benefits. And if the premium or the reimbursement amount has an upper limit by definition, it violates the ACA's annual limit restriction. And
right.
thus it triggers this excise tax that I spoke about beforehand. And that's essentially the why we have this legal fiction and this prohibition that remains for employers wanting to reimburse their employees on a tax-free basis for the purchase of an individual market plan.
Do you see, Chris, last kind of point on this, do you see any future changes and revisions, you know, on the table and that can be coming forward to kind of, you know, change this?
Yeah, and the reason why, you know, I wanted to jump on the show today and talk to folks and answer that question particularly is, last week, the House of Representatives actually passed legislation that would reverse the federal department's guidance, as I described, for employers with fewer than 50 full-time equivalent employees. So, in
essence, is this the HRA bill, Chris? Is this the HRA bill that you talk about?
Correct. So it's the actual number is H.R. 5447, so 5447,
okay.
affectionately
yep.
referred to as the HRA bill.
So what does this do, Chris? What is this?
So essentially the legislation turns off the definition of a group health plan that I described
yep.
for these reimbursement arrangements. So it essentially reverses the federal department's guidance as it applies to employers with 50 or fewer full-time equivalent employees. Thus, meaning these small employers can actually now, pause when I say now, if the legislation becomes law, because it has not become law as of yet, but if the legislation becomes law, these small employers will be permitted to reimburse employees on a tax-free basis for the purchase of an individual market plan.
That's interesting. What do you you know, you're kind of there and living and breathing on the Hill. What do you think it's the opportunity is for this to become law, and if so, when?
Yeah, it's a good question. And the truth, that's why I wanted to come on online, because a lot of folks out there think that this legislation already passed, is already part of the law, and that's not the case. It has taken a huge step forward with respect to the House of Representatives agreeing to this legislation on a bipartisan basis. And to your question, this now goes over to the Senate. And the Senate has to consider it and actually approve it before it could go to the president's desk to be signed into law. Unfortunately, it appears that the legislation is running into a bit of a buzzsaw in the Senate. So it doesn't appear, at least at this stage, that the legislation will pass the Senate between now and election time. However, we're likely to have a quote-unquote lame duck session, which will occur after the election, where typical end-of-year legislation or legislative activity occurs, and a lot of, let's say, bipartisan provisions that did not move during an election year are more likely to move, and it is actually expected. I give it a 60-40 chance that this legislation is included in an end-of-year legislative package, ultimately approved by the Senate and the House, and ultimately signed into law by the President, with probably an effective date of January 1, 2018.
This would have a big impact on kind of transferring to our next discussion. We talk a little bit about private exchanges that you've been intimately involved with, because when it comes to the small group and the, you know, the opportunity around small group and executing a defined contribution strategy, you know, via an exchange, it's pretty important, right?
Yeah, it goes back to, you know, the desire of small employers, you know, wanting to provide this type of flexibility to providing a contribution to their employees so they can help their employees purchase health coverage. But many small employers are struggling with actually affording health insurance as due in large part to the ACA market reforms in the small group market, which has increased premiums markedly. So this will just add some additional flexibility or provide some additional flexibility to those small employers that want to help their employees better afford and purchase health insurance.
And when you look at the small employer market too, as we have an increasing challenge to retain skilled workers, this is pretty important to help those small employers provide some form of benefits to their employees and keep them on board with them versus losing them upstream to a larger company.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's where a lot of the folks in the small business community, you know, have been advocating for this change, for this reversal of the federal department's guidance, at least as it relates to small employers. And again, I just want to emphasize to everybody on the listeners today that this legislation is only applicable to employers with fewer than 50 full-time equivalents. And the reason why that was put into the law is there was some concern about this legislation impacting directly the ACA. And so this definition tracks the definition under the employer mandate.
Right. Let's turn the chapter a little bit. Let's talk about private exchange a little bit. Are policymakers even aware of private exchanges and the features of a private exchange?
It's an excellent question, and my answer is yes. And I've had many of conversation with folks on Capitol Hill about private exchanges, and myself, including other industry stakeholders, have had conversations with congressional staff. So actually, they are indeed aware of private exchanges, and at least, for example, when it comes to congressional Republicans, again, are aware and actually very much would like to leverage the features that a private exchange offers. And, for example, the white paper that the House Republicans recently released as an ACA replace or ACA modification, while that white paper doesn't quite speak to private exchanges, staff that I've spoken to and staff that have spoken to other industry stakeholders continue to say that they would like private exchanges to be the distribution channel of choice for example, individual market plans to which a tax credit will be available to certain individuals, as well as promoting private exchanges in the group market space. So policymakers are aware, and it's just a matter of the politics allowing some sort of, let's say, proposals to enable private exchanges to be that distribution channel of choice.
What's the policymakers' overall feeling and even awareness to HSA eligible plans and health savings accounts?
Well, it breaks, you know, really along party lines, sadly, right? Yeah. And we've known that because that's been the case, you know, since 2003 when HSAs came into the law. And on the Democratic side, sadly, we're hearing the same, and I say this sadly, this is from my point of view, of course, we're hearing the same response from congressional Democrats that HSAs are really only geared toward upper income folks, you know, can take advantage of the tax benefit And, you know, that's to the disadvantage of lower-income individuals. And there's some resistance on the Democratic side to HSA-eligible plans. On the Republican side, however, you know, we've seen legislation year over year promoting HSA-eligible plans. In the recent House Republican white paper, there are proposals to expand HSAs. Chairman Hatch, chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, has legislation out there which similarly expand HSAs and the ability of individuals and employees to enroll in an HSA-eligible plan. And I'll say this one last thing back on the kind of the Democratic side. There has been some guidance issued by the Department of Health and Human Services that may adversely impact HSA-eligible plans, at least as it relates to those plans being offered on the ACA exchanges.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting stuff. Talk to me a little bit about the Cadillac tax and where you see that today and where do you see that heading. I mean, are we going to keep kicking the can down the road, or what's your view on the Cadillac tax?
Yeah, I've consistently stated that I believe the Cadillac tax will be repealed. I believe it will be repealed regardless of who wins the White House in November. But I also have consistently stated that I believe another limitation on the tax preference for employer-sponsored insurance will replace it. So the question is what will that limitation look like? And then what exceptions to that new limitation will be put into the law? For example, as it relates to the Cadillac tax and at least consumer-driven health plans, as I think most know, employee contributions to an FSA and employee contributions to an HSA are counted toward the Cadillac tax. And there have been efforts on Capitol Hill to try to provide an exception for those employee contributions to an FSA as well as an HSA. And I would say that those efforts are actually making progress, so much so that, again, referencing the House Republicans white paper, which in that white paper they replaced the Cadillac tax with a direct cap on the exclusion. In that white paper they specifically say that employee HSA contributions will not be counted toward that new limitation on the exclusion. So I do believe, even although Democrats have not spoken publicly about the issue, that if they were to win the White House or if they were to win back the Senate and they were to repeal the Cadillac tax, replace it with some sort of limitation, I'm cautiously optimistic that there would be some exceptions provided for contributions to consumer-driven health plans.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's good news for you know, for many. Hey, Chris, it's been great having you on the program. I want to give you an opportunity to provide any final thoughts to our audience, if you would, please.
Yeah, just one detail back on this H.R. 55447, the HRA bill. You know, contributions are capped at a specified amount. An employer cannot be also offering a group health plan and offer these tax-free reimbursements to folks. So it's an all-or-nothing proposition. You either are offering a group health plan or you're offering these tax-free reimbursements for an individual market plan. Those are some details that I think folks out there need to know. And if you ever have questions regarding some of the details, you know, feel free to get back to Doug and Ron, as well as some of the other practitioners out there that play in this space.
Yeah, Chris, thank you for that. Let our listeners know how they can get in touch with you, please.
Well, my email, I guess, is fairly easy. It's just chris@cclawandpolicy.com, cclawandpolicy.com. It's all one word, and the and is spelled out. And my phone number, which I don't mind you all giving me a call, it's 703-209-0690. Again, 703-209-0690. Happy to talk to anybody about all the fun stuff that we just talked about today.
And just to remind my audience too, that Chris will be with us speaking at Private Exchange Forum Baltimore in September, so you can come and talk to him personally there and listen to him there. Chris, great having you on the program as always. Have a great Fourth, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, guys. Hope everyone has a great July 4th holiday.
Thanks, Chris, very much. And just want to remind our audience as we close this 4th of July weekend program, Private Exchange Forum, special promotion. Go on in all cap July 4 and get $200 off attendee registration. Go to privateexchangeforum.com and register. We appreciate you all joining us. We hope you have a great, happy, safe, and healthy 4th, and we'll see you next Friday on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.